Welcome to another Network Computing Security Podcast. My name is Kurt Franklin. I'm your host for these podcasts. And in this episode, we have a very nice group discussion on a topic that is complicated to the point of having our eyes glazed over for a lot of us. The topic's encryption. And I spoke with a team of folks from WinMagic about encryption, and especially encryption as it pertains to regular business applications. Now, a lot of us have no trouble at all understanding the need for encryption in military or public safety applications. And we can even understand the need for encrypting sensitive data for business applications. I mean, let's think back to, any of the massive identity theft crimes that we've heard about over the past year, and think that they would be entirely different if the personal data in those databases had been encrypted. Well, when I talked to the folks from WinMagic, we looked at simplifying some of the issues so that even those people who don't have a degree in advanced mathematics or people who haven't spent their life dealing with encryption, I include myself in this number, and I think most of us fall into this category, can understand the differences between some of the encryption technologies, the various strengths and weaknesses, and begin to get an understanding of how and why we should be using encryption for even our more mundane applications. Now, this was a group telephone interview, so there are places where the volume for one or another participant is a little bit low. I apologize for that, but it's sort of the nature of having recorded over the telephone. You'll hear three people besides me on this. You'll hear Jim Armstrong, you'll hear Vino Zeno, and T. Vindeloy. All have interesting things to add, and all did a good job of helping me understand a little bit more about encryption. Here's my discussion with folks from WinMagic. I'll be back at the end to talk about our next podcast. I want to start by asking a question about encryption. You know, we've had in the last year a couple of articles out where people have found vulnerabilities in encryption algorithms. What would you say is the current state of encryption for general data protection?
I will answer this question. With regard to encryption, we don't see any problem with symmetric or asymmetric encryption at this time. And the AES 256-bit or AES in general has been just approved by NIST a few years ago. And, you know, the one before that, DES, was good for 25 years. So, and even at the end, it was not broken per se. It was not only, it was too short, so people can try to do the brute force attack, but they didn't really find any problem with the DES encryption. So with the AES encryption, I expect it to be at least as long as the DES, I mean 10, 20, 25 years without problem. RSA, an elliptic curve, while again the attack has become stronger and stronger, they stand well in the last couple of years. So that I don't expect any problem in that regard either. For the hashing algorithm, so there have been some attack, successful attack on SHA-1, but they are again theory attack. I don't expect that to influence our encryption technology much in the short term.
Well, with the prospect for successful encryption over the long haul looking good, I'm struck by the fact that when we get into a discussion of encryption, we very rapidly get into a realm of some fairly complex mathematics. And for someone who's not a security expert, especially a security expert in the government realm, this all seems very complex and very daunting. Is it worth it for someone in private enterprise to consider using these encryption algorithms in ways that, that they can actually see? I mean, besides just doing something like a VPN tunnel, I mean, is it worth people in the private enterprise taking their time to really think about encryption?
I'll answer this, Jim Armstrong. The simple answer to your question is that I believe that any corporation, large or small, and it doesn't matter where they happen to be in the world, would be not be doing their particular job from the inside on a security matter if they do not consider disk encryption. Disk encryption has come a long way over the years, and the SecureDoc, which is the product that we have, as far as an end user goes, it's very unobtrusive. It's transparent to the user. Once it's applied to your laptop, you don't even know that the end user doesn't even know that it's there, but it's always protecting the data that that resides on it 24/7. So, you know, the situation which where we have some legislation, like in California, 1386, the Bill 1386, and and it's kind of, it has spawned another numerous ones across the U.S. We have something similar in Canada as well, where it says that if you go out and you know, you lose the laptop and it contains information, you know, that could be used by a, you know, say for evil and not good, you know, you're responsible for that. So, and it could, you know, and a lot of companies or some companies have seen the cost of what that occurs. Now, you know, the simple thing is that you get encryption, you put it on this laptop, and now if you do ever lose a laptop that has, it contains information, you don't even have to go and you know, tell your clientele that, you know, that something has been lost. So, you know, the onus is on the company now, but we in our particular industry and our software make it so easy for the end user that they don't have to worry about mathematical formulas and all this stuff. You know, all they want to do is protect their data, and we do that in a very simple format, yet we provide the highest degree of security.
Well, now, when I hear people talking about placing encryption protection around large volumes of data, as you mentioned, encrypting an entire disk's worth of data, I think about the performance considerations that we see in things like VPN concentrators. And so my question is, I know with my laptop, running the applications I run now in a absolutely unencrypted fashion, I end up complaining about the slow performance. So what kind of performance hit are people going to see and have to accept if they want to protect their, you know, any part of their disk or any part of their data through encryption?
Jim Armstrong, I'll answer that one again. That's a very simple one. With our software and encryption, the way that our systems work is our engineers have done a lot of work where there really is no noticeable overhead. The thing that we find when we have large evaluations by large companies and so on, where they go in, you know, our degradation would be somewhere between 2 and 3% as an average. We do not have, and you know, on a newer laptop, you would never have any kind of concerns. You would never see it. In fact, whatever you're working with now, and you're saying that your machine may be somewhat slow, I would tend to think that you wouldn't see any really difference at all if you had our software applied to it and encrypting all those in that entire drive.
Here's T. Could
yes
address this and actually the question before that a bit as well. So when you say these days encryption seems to be very complex and, you know, difficult to use, I would fully agree. It's like at the beginning with Windows computing. So you have problem with graphic card and all kind of hardware. We are a bit better now with the stage with encryption, but still we are at the infancy stage. So, but then, you know, like Microsoft and other hardware manufacturers are thinking of encryption from the beginning. So, like the fact that, for example, cell phone manufacturers come to us and ask when they design the cell phone about their plan to include encryption and what they should do to make it easier for use for user. I think within a few years, encryption will be very transparent and very easy to use for all. So if you think about it, I would say that anything with computers would one day have encryption. So any user would be able to say, I don't want anybody to read our data. And any enterprise should be able to say, well, it's my data. The user can leave. I can still read my data, but it's my computer, so I can read my data. And with proper preparation, we are there. Encryption itself is nothing too complex. So the cryptographers have done a good job to make sure the encryption algorithms are secure. We just have to apply them properly. I understand. I know that, you know, the last 10 years are always a year of PKI and smart card. But I think, you know, several movements are taking place, and we can see the integration mostly within the next few years.
Well, I appreciate that, and I want to ask a question. You talked about applying encryption properly.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time when I have seen encryption used, it has been as data is being transferred. You know, I think most people, their primary encounter with encryption comes in something like a VPN tunnel these days.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see a vast difference in encryption as it's applied to data in transit versus encryption applied to data in storage? Or do you think that we'll ultimately encrypt it in both senses, that it will be encrypted in storage and then the, you know, perhaps even the encrypted data will be again encrypted as it's transferred?
The answer is 50 again. Okay, when you use this encryption, so the moment you read the file or the data to send elsewhere, the data is automatically decrypted. So you wouldn't send the data encrypted twice if you use a VPN.
Okay.
In apply cryptography, similar rules apply. You will have similar guidelines, similar way to encrypt, whether it is storage or it is transmission. So people just see, you know, transmission encryption more than storage encryption because it happens all the time. So you go to the internet all the time, but then you don't lose your laptop all the time. So that's why people don't talk about storage encryption that much. But, you know, any weakness, any security gap is a security gap.
Okay. Yeah, that's understandable. I like your illustration. You're right. I'm on the internet every day. But with any luck at all, I'm not losing a laptop every day.
Correct. Yeah. But you can see that there are several conferences about email encryption, about internet, network security. But even today, there are not too many conferences about this encryption.
Okay.
Can I add something there, Kurt?
Of course.
It's Nino Zeno speaking. I spent about 15 years in the wireless industry, and we had similar problems in the infancy of that industry as well. Typically, you know, the first few years when you're introducing a new product, it's black magic. You know, how does something go across the airways? How do you protect your integrity? How do you keep people from stealing data?
And 15, 20 years ago, I mean, people would sit there for hours and days and question you on your wireless protocol and how you encrypted things and so forth. But now, if you look around, virtually every major store has a wireless, real-time terminal where they update their inventory. So all those answers have been basically answered because it's become mainstream. People don't ask questions, am I using spread spectrum, am I using 2.4, 5.8? They just go out and buy the product and use it. And, of course, some fairly sensitive data is going across the airways, and there's much, much less security with a lot of people using wireless systems, especially cell phones. So I see that there's a lot of regulation in the encryption industry, with a lot of standards being set up, which is much more solid, much more secure than things we're using every day.
Okay.
So in the next 5 to 10 years, I foresee that encryption, especially computer, laptop encryption, being a standard product for everybody's use. We won't have to worry about algorithms at that point. It'll be a standard part of what you just put on your computer.
Okay. Well, now, that brings up something. Whenever we talk about encryption, of course, we look at having to have some sort of credentials in order to get the information in the clear, to have it be unencrypted for us. The great example that I use, my dad is now 70 years old. He's still working every day, and he works for a large defense contractor. He has, I think at last count, 6 strong passwords that roll every 30 days. And simply keeping up with his passwords is a huge ordeal for him. Are we getting into a situation where, in order to protect our information, we're all going to have, develop, superhuman feats of memory in order to keep up with our 24-digit strong passwords to get at all our data?
Jim, I'll look after this as well. I agree with everything that you've said, and it appears that we are, we're making some really difficult choices out there for a lot of people. I can only speak for, our product line and what some of the things that we have done in relatively the short period of time. We will offer, authentication on a couple of levels where you really, the password may be, I'll use the word maybe forgiven, but now we're going to be looking at other methods such as biometrics. We have recently released our last product that where it does support biometrics, and yet we do ours at pre-boot. So, the scenario there would be you turn on your machine, you have a biometric reader plugged in, and you would also have a smart card. Now, normally we would like to call that a 3-factor authentication, but it almost appears that corporate USA and Canada are embracing that as a 2-factor authentication, where really the only thing, where the fingerprint now becomes your password. And you can do that with our products right now, so that, when you turn the machine on, the BIOS loads, you just put your fingerprint on there, and you could enter into the machine. So, it's not the way that we had, when we drafted it up on the board, but I believe it will be the way that it will be adopted by the corporations, because just as you said, it's a real pain to go walking around with 40 different passwords into every application that you happen to go. So, 3 years ago, if we had this conversation, I'm sure that we would never have come up with the biometrics as a solution. And, now, it's a situation where a number of the federal government agencies in the U.S. are looking at this as a high-level security solution for themselves. So I think that's kind of where we're going. It trails on what Nino said a little while ago, where we really, as we kind of go down this road, and it takes a little while, all these things will just fall into place, and nobody will ever, probably if we have this conversation 2 years hence, we'll say, how do we ever get away without biometrics?
Okay.
Here's T. I wanted to add a bit too. These days, you can get free of charge so-called password safe or password vault, where you have to enter only one password and you get all the passwords to use for different purposes. And that is what I have to use as well. I have such a thing. But these things are still a bit difficult and awkward to use these days. But I think, as Nino said before, you know, within a very short time, within whatever, it will be, you know, very transparent, and so there will be one federated identity or whatever the solution is. It will be people may use the fingerprint or just use one password to fix on the problem. But I have to say, I didn't see it for the last 5 or 6 or 10 years. It should have come earlier than that. And maybe I'm jumping a bit here as well. The fingerprint, which we always say what will be the solution, it probably will be the solution. I mean, some form of what you are. But the fingerprint, the cryptographic key, are random and secret. Your fingerprint is not random and not secret. So you cannot use the fingerprint to do all kind of encryption technology you are using. But the fingerprint will be used to enable the smart card or the PKI technology, which is underlying, and it will be hopefully implemented automatically in all solutions.
Okay. Well, as we come down to the end of our time together, let me ask this question. If there are IT managers and executives who are looking at the possibility of implementing some of the systems that we've discussed, encryption in storage, encryption in transit with links back to a relatively easy to use smart card and or biometric system, you know, 2 or 3-factor authentication. Are there any things they should be doing now to make sure that their systems are ready for the application of better encryption and advanced credentials for that encryption? You know, are there any things that they should be looking at doing beforehand to make the transition to that protection easier?
I will answer that. So the press release we had with State Department is an example for that. In that pilot project, the State Department have used the smart card and fingerprint biometrics to authenticate the user. It is mainly a telework project where the user stay at home and use the same computer he used for his family, but then he go into a secure environment mode where he can talk with, say, the headquarters of State Department and do the job. So that solves all the problems we just talked about. And it is a combination of server application together, but that's where we are getting toward to. And if the pilot is successful, I mean, probably most of the federal government, of the U.S. government, will be having that kind of protection. And so where right now several vendors and several users have to work toward a solution, within a few years, it will be probably just go and buy and use it.
Jim here again. I also think that, you know, we see more of a proof of concept. You know, there usually isn't a lot of things, we'll say, that they have, that a corporation has to prepare. But there, you know, I mean, every corporation has its own things unique to them. And, you know, it could be hardware issues. It could be software issues. So there is some sort of prep time. But usually when we are qualifying and working with a client, we will go through, a pilot or a small demo make sure that, ensure to them that they don't have any concerns or that it's going to work with all their, you know, software. And they may have custom software. They may even have software that they have written in-house to do particular jobs and things so that, you know, that we would never, ever see unless it was at a, you know, a certain corporation. So what we do with the proof of concept and the trials will eliminate those kind of concerns. And it usually, it probably took me longer to explain it than it really does take within the corporation for them to look at it and address it and authorize it and go on.
Okay.
And here's T again. So maybe it's the typical synergy we always talk about. You know, the government take care of the security aspect of things. So NIST say, well, the departments should do it, and the advanced department, like State Department or Department of Defense, come up with solutions, and it will be used in the U.S. government and the private sectors afterward through NIST, for example.
Well, that was my interview with the team from WinMagic. I hope you found it as interesting as I did. I hope to have more on encryption in the future. I think this is one of those topics where we tend to leave the details to experts, and it's important for all of us to have an understanding of what's going on under the covers when it comes to talking about encryption. Well, this is the second podcast this week, and we will be continuing the twice-weekly podcast next week. First up will be a discussion that I had with folks from WatchGuard, followed by an interview with the people from SPSS on the use of their technology within security. Hope you're enjoying these. As always, please let me know if there's something you would like to hear or if you'd just like to hear us do something different on the Security Podcast. For Network Computing and the Security Podcast, I'm your host, Kurt Franklin, saying so long until next time.